regulators. You regulate any stealing of his property. We're damn good, too. But you can't be any geek off the street. You gotta be handy with the steal, if you know what I mean, earn your keep.
All right, welcome to another version of the BOTC podcast, everybody. I am Ty, or TB, from the site bringonthecats.com, joined tonight, as usual, by Panjandrum, and also again this week by Bracket Cats. So say hello, gentlemen.
Hola, y como esta?
Nah, not all at once.
Yeah, I don't speak that language. Hello.
We're in America, so you're going to speak American tonight.
I speak the voice of the new America.
I don't even want to know what that is. Is that like from South Park or what?
No, it's from me.
All right, Panjandrum is creating his own language tonight, apparently, folks. Well, we are back for another week of the podcast with no appreciable new news in football. We're still getting ready for the ever-exciting Pinstripe Bowl in New York City. And apparently Bill Snyder has said that he has no idea who our quarterback will be. I'm calling complete bullshit on that. Other than that, not a lot new in basketball. We're in the middle of finals week this week, so no games because the student-athletes are taking care of the student part of the equation, which I guess technically is still part of their job description. The last action for the Cats was last Saturday in Chicago. Jacob Poland's homecoming, in which he was not spectacular, although he wasn't bad, and the Cats got a 68-60 victory over Loyola of Chicago in the smallest gym that they will play in all season. I didn't get a chance to watch this game. I was up in Nebraska, where apparently boxing is a bigger deal than K-State Loyola on FSN. I don't know whether they're already making their transition over to the Big Ten and they don't care about Big 12 basketball anymore or whatever the deal was, but...
Well, they're into antiquated sports. I mean, obviously, if everyone else is watching MMA, they're watching boxing. If everyone else is watching anything new on television, they're watching football reruns.
That's true. They are, in fact, a legend, according to the new Big Ten, which we'll get to in a little bit. But I'm going to turn over the floor to you guys here for a little bit of analysis of what you saw from the K-State Loyola game. Judging from the open game thread, not a lot of people pleased with what was happening in the game. And then after the game, kind of interesting, the team ended up having to take a bus back to Manhattan, and it took a long, long time, which gave the players a lot of times to mess around with their phones and their iPads, which of course puts them on Twitter, most of them. And Jake Poland had some interesting comments for K-State fans. So let's start with the game, and then maybe we can transfer into the extracurricular stuff. So why don't you take the floor and talk about what you saw from the game.
Well, I would I'm going to go ahead and parrot what Frank said, which is, I'm glad it's over. I had that thing down as a trap game from the start. We avoided the trap. It was still pretty ugly. And I bet if you asked him now, he'd say he would never have scheduled that thing, despite how nice it was to take Jake home and all that lovey-dovey stuff. The part people may not have been aware of is that I guess the fans there were just vicious to Frank, like unbelievably bad. And the security was extremely lax, so he didn't come away feeling particularly good about himself, I would imagine.
Hard to have good security in a gym that holds 3,500, I would think. I think my high school gym held more people than that.
Yeah, I think they underestimated not just the turnout, but the amount of people who would turn out to go yell at that angry guy they see on TV. And that may be just a reflection on our sports culture in general, I don't know. Anyhow, you could tell the guys were not that up for the game. They had their usual 5 minutes of intensity followed by 15 minutes of lax play that let a team hang around until the end. And other than free throws, which were markedly improved, I'd have a hard time pointing to any aspect of the game I thought we took a step forward. I mean, defense was okay. I mean, we held them to 60, which is becoming kind of the benchmark this year. We've been pretty consistent at that.
We're actually eerily consistent at holding teams to 60, no matter their skill level.
And, you know, Loyola's a pretty good shooting team, and they missed a ton of free throws. They were worse than us. They were worse from the field. They were worse from three. So I guess you got to give us some of the credit for that because, I mean, they hadn't just played a game or something. It wasn't like their legs weren't there. So that was good, I guess. But offensive flow was abysmal. I mean, the first five possessions were pretty good, and then it just went completely south. Still have major turnover problems. We still have just inabilities to pass, inabilities to remember that we should go to the post first before jacking up threes. A lot of the same junk that we're seeing, and it's not improving. On a position-by-position basis, I'd just say, you know, I was pleased that Jake didn't play worse. I thought he'd have one of those terrible Denny Clemente games, you know, when his mom was in the stands. And he didn't force things, but he still made the same kind of mistakes he's been making when he plays the point. But he quickly realized once again his shot wasn't there, and he started going into the free throw line and hitting that floater and generating consistency, and had about the quietest stat line that he's assembled in terms of production. Will wasn't particularly great either. He didn't score, I don't think. He did have a few nice assists, so there was that, but you know, it was kind of a so-so game for him. The nice thing about the game was the reemergence of Martavius Irving. I think a lot of us were starting to wonder what happened. He had a great start to the season and then sort of disappeared for the last four or five games. And, you know, all the wing players got in Frank's doghouse again. But he came back strong. He hit more threes than anyone. He hit his free throws. That's the amazing thing. He'd only hit one all year, and he hit almost all of them. So he's obviously, I think Frank said he'd spent some time in the gym and gotten some of this stuff straightened out, so that's good. And we did have a Nick Russell sighting, although he didn't do much. So all in all, I'd say it was kind of a, you know, hold-the-line kind of day for the guards. I know they got infinitely better, but they didn't get markedly worse. I'll go ahead and let Pandrum discuss the bigs.
Well, I think Brackett kind of took off on the right foot when he started talking about the first 5 minutes of the game going pretty well, looking like there was a flow, and I think the reason for that was because they pushed the ball inside. There was a pretty strong advantage offensively when we put the ball inside. Obviously, Curtis Kelly looked unstoppable those first few minutes, those first few possessions, where I think, what did he start off with, like the first 7 points of the game or something like that? He really started off well, and we were getting the ball into Freddie and letting him do his thing. And then all of a sudden, we just stopped getting the ball inside. Entry passes went to crap. We started, you know, taking outside shots, which, granted, is our game. And you wouldn't have expected the offensive rebounding margin that, you know, Loyola had on us. So, I mean, really, I don't think the game plan was bad. I just think the execution was bad for the most part. But when you're really pounding the ball inside and you have such an advantage there, I think it's really very unfortunate that we weren't able to take better advantage of that. I won't really say too much. I think Brackett pretty much hit the nail on the head. I think, you know, there were two things that kind of stuck out to me in this game that really say it all. And the first was the rebounding margin, where Loyola out-rebounded K-State, which I thought was really sad, considering that offensive rebounds were not their forte. And second of all, to kind of borrow a line from Itchy and Scratchy, one of our posters in the open game thread who had the quote of the year thus far, Loyola basically totally won the stat line in terms of minutes cared. And it's becoming pretty obvious, you know, K-State seems to play down to their level of competition. And when you get a team like Loyola, even when they're all stoked, you know this team is just so immature. I don't want to really be a Frank parrot, but you can really tell they are, because they just seem to play down to the level of the competition when they're hyped up for a game like Virginia Tech or like Gonzaga, regardless of how good or bad that team may be. If they have a number in front of their name, they're going to go out and play well. They went out and played toe-to-toe against Duke for, what, 30 minutes of the game there before Duke's superiority in terms of maturity and execution really just kind of took off and ran away. So I think K-State's the kind of team that needs to be motivated, which is why I feel the next couple of games are really going to be the indicator in my mind of how Big 12 play goes, because these two teams are going to be indicative, I think, of how this team prepares mentally for Big 12 competition.
That's a good point. And I think that I was talking with a guy that I work with earlier this week, and you know, this issue of playing down to the level of your competition is a thing that doesn't really concern me from the standpoint of playing the likes of Texas Southern and Loyola of Chicago, because K-State's going to beat those teams. Yeah, barring, you know, the most bizarre turn of circumstances in which we somehow lose a crazy upset game. But the problem is, when you play down to the level of your competition, you really risk, once you get into conference play, you risk losing a game to a Colorado or a Nebraska or a Texas Tech. Teams that we have to beat, and if they're in our quote-unquote division, have to beat twice if we're going to compete for the conference championship at the end of the year. So to me, the problem with playing down to your competition is not really that big of a deal in the non-conference. It's building the mentality of, we got to bring it every single night, no matter who the opposition is, to get ready for conference play and get ready for those games. Because last year, you look at some of the games we dropped. We lose at home to Oklahoma State. We lose at home to Iowa State. You win those two, and you're right in the middle of the mix for the conference title going into the last week. Whereas, as it turned out, you know, KU ended up winning by, you know, a couple of games last year. This team has got to eliminate those kind of hiccups if they're going to compete in the Big 12.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I sat through that Iowa State Senior Day game, and it was just a disaster last year. So, you know, there was a stretch in the second half where I think we collected something like, well, they had like five of their rebounds in one possession because we blocked three or four shots in a row. And you could see K-State had just flipped the switch, and it didn't last very long. And, you know, then they let them back into it. But at that possession, when the intensity really came on, you could really see what this team could do. I mean, it literally makes the rim impossible to reach when they bring it like that. It's just a matter of how does he get that out of them consistently. And, you know, we keep saying it's just like last December. They looked pretty cruddy until they went out to Vegas. They had that finals week. I honestly believe some of the shooters got some of their shooting motions corrected looking at film, and I think that could happen again this week. And they just brought a whole new level of focus, and they took UNLV apart, and they went and did the same thing to Alabama, and then we didn't really look back from that point. And I think maybe it's sunshine pumping to say it, but I really think you can see the same thing these next two games. At least more of an effort like we got against Gonzaga or Virginia Tech.
And gentlemen, for a great moment in podcasting, I actually have to take the dog out. This is completely awkward and weird, but if I'm gone for a few minutes, that's where I've gone. So I'll be back.
All right. Well, while Panjandrum takes his dog, who by the way, is named Willie, true K-State fan, that Panjandrum. As he takes his dog out for a walk in the frigid Kansas City evening air. We talked about how this team is playing down to the level of their competition in some of these games against inferior competition. That's not going to be a problem for the next few games, as K-State will this weekend meet up with Florida, and next week will return not home but to the Sprint Center, which is becoming sort of a second home for the Cats right now, to face Lon Kruger and UNLV, which a team, as Brackett mentioned, was the game last year that kind of sprung K-State forward toward their, at least in some ways, got their run started last year. Let's talk about Florida first. I haven't watched much of Florida. I caught a little bit of their game against Ohio State, where they really just got dominated eventually. They hung tough for a while, but really did not end up being much of a factor in that game. You know, Florida is one of those teams who I think that preseason they were thought to be better than it looks like they're actually going to turn out to be. But still, we're not playing in Gainesville, but it's still going to be a hell of a tough test to go down there and play against the Gators. bracket. Have you done any looking into the Gators, and what are your thoughts on going down and taking on the Billy Donovan coach club down in Florida?
Yeah, I got the roster up right here. You know, I've seen at some parts of the Ohio State game. I watched a good chunk of the game against UCF, so I probably got a pretty good picture of their weaknesses and maybe not so much of their strengths, but I think clearly Florida was overrated coming into the year, and I didn't understand why they were considered a top-10 team. I mean, they didn't even win a game in the tournament. They've got a nice collection of players, but you put them in the Big 12, and I think you're looking at, I don't know, maybe an Oklahoma State, honestly. The trick to being this team, I think, is simple. You got to duplicate the UCF game plan. UCF clogged up the middle, took away space for their bigs to operate, and tricked Florida into shooting a lot of bad perimeter jump shots, and Florida didn't make them. And typically Florida doesn't when they get kind of shooting happy. And that's what they did on – and then they collected the rebounds. So, you know, if we go down there with a renewed emphasis on rebounding, and I'll visit that point again in a few minutes, I think you're going to see some typical success like we tend to have. Offensively, to attack them, you know, Marcus Jordan just had a career day and everyone lauded him and, you know, saying he's his father's son. Well, Marcus Jordan can't elevate too much. Florida gave him a lot. They gave him a lot of the lane drive. They fouled him pretty badly and gave him a lot of free throws. And just, you know, Florida looked like us at times. It just had no hustle. I think Jake's going to have to continue to drive lane. I think we're going to have to continue to pound it into the bigs. Just all the things that we do inconsistently and, you know, let that open up the perimeter and then hope that Martavius Irving doesn't press and take a bunch of bad shots since he's going home. Just some names to keep out an eye on. Kenny Boynton scares me the most of any of their players, even though he's had a pretty bad season. But I just feel like he's going to pop off anytime. He's from that area, I believe, and Martavius has played him since fifth grade, so there's some familiarity there. That said, Jake's going to draw him, I would think. He's their best slashing threat. He's kind of like Tyshawn Taylor, I think, but just not nearly as good at this point, just very inconsistent.
Does he say crazy stuff on Facebook like Tyshawn Taylor?
No, as far as I know, he does not do that. That's reserved for Florida football players who tell their fans to go die and other such fun things.
That's true.
The point guard is Irving Walker. He's pretty much a pass-first point guard. That's a guy that I think Spradlin can handle pretty well. He's also really small. He's only 5'8". It gets more interesting further into the front court. Chandler Parsons, people probably remember, he made two buzzer-beating shots, I guess, early this year. Last season to win games. That's a guy that Rodney ought to be able to handle. I mean, you know, he's a decent post player. He can hit the three when he's hot, but he's not overwhelmingly athletic. And it's no worse than what we've seen from teams like Gonzaga and Washington State. If you can guard Klay Thompson, you can guard most of Florida's scorers. I'm pretty impressed with their bigs. Vernon Macklin is their veteran senior, redshirt senior. He's 6'10", 240 guy. He's just a big beast who just clogs it up. He's better than Lou. He's got a better offensive game, but he's kind of that same style, just a big body. And I hope, you know, people may not know this, but Lou Colon is back in Manhattan for a month or so training with the team, and I guess he's just been beating them up in practice this week. I hope it pays off because Aspria and Kelly are going to have to bring it big time against this guy. He is going to beat them up, and they're going to have to respond. They can't go soft. And the other name to watch out for is Patrick Young. He's a freshman. He's 6'9", 245. He's having a stellar season so far. I think he's a McDonald's All-American. He's everything we want Wally Judge to turn into. And he's going to create some matchup difficulties because if he's in there with Macklin, then you're going to have to dedicate probably an undersized big like Jamar or, you know, a skinnier guy like Jordan. And that's going to be interesting to see how that matchup goes. And then there's Alex Tyus, who people will know is the prematurely balding, dreadlocked, freakazoid player that they have.
That's not a hair combination that you hear very often.
Yeah, he's a distinctive visual character, that's for sure. He was more of a scorer from last year. I haven't noticed too much from him in what I've seen this year, but, you know, he's a senior. He's 6'8", so he's kind of a matchup problem playing the three. So they got a nice collection of players. They're all decent players. If they would play together as a team, they would be better than the sum of their parts, but you haven't really seen it out of them, and they just strike me as kind of a soft team that we could beat up if we really assert what we do.
Well, there you have it. I'm gonna go back to something that I think Pan says in just about every open game thread, and this was something you said early in your discussion of this game bracket, but repeat it with me. When Jake gets into the lane, good things happen.
Yeah.
If we can get Jake driving to the hoop, if we can get the ball inside to Curtis Kelly, Freddie Espria, hopefully Wally Judge if he plays, Jamar Samuels, those kind of guys, when those guys get the ball inside and they're, you know, locked and loaded into the game, there aren't a lot of teams that can really match up very well with them. So it strikes me that, you know, a lot of times it kind of reminds me of last year with KU, how they would go stretches of the game where they would just completely forget that they had Cole Aldrich inside, who, for as much as we couldn't stand him, was pretty much unstoppable on the college level. So if our guys will just get their heads in the game and just remember, and I shouldn't say that because now I'm criticizing the players and I'll probably get called out on Twitter for that, but if they just remember for significant stretches of time that they actually have really good post players inside that they can, you know, either drive into the lane and dish to or throw the ball into in the post or whatever it is, there just aren't that many teams, I think, that can beat K-State right now when they play that way. Certainly, you know, nothing against Florida. I think they're probably a pretty solid team. But if our guys focus and play the way that we know they can, I really see this as being a, you know, maybe not a really easy win, but I think that they get out of Florida with a win.
Yeah, it could be the kind of win where we pull away late, making free throws, and it looks worse than it was. I think they're better than Gonzaga and Virginia Tech. I don't think they're as good as Washington State. And I also don't think this environment's going to be as difficult as Washington State. It's in Florida, but Florida fans are not diehards. Most of them are planning a trip to the bowl game or worrying about Will Muschamp. I think it'll be a decent crowd. I think it'll be anything to write home about. And it's in Miami. I think Frank's going to have a lot of support there, too. And, you know, I can't wait for the story that Austin Meek is working on about Frank's roots down there. But,
yeah, same here.
You know, there's a whole Latino community for whom Frank Martin is one of those rare guys who got out and had great success. And there aren't a lot of people probably that they can point to at that level. And I wonder how much the community is going to come out to support him and the players just on that basis alone. So I think it's going to be a true neutral side environment. You're going to have some fans for, some against, but for the most part, it'll probably be pretty subdued, just like the NCAA tournament. So all those factors together, this game's completely in our control. And I still think the key to the game is rebounding. I don't have the stats to back it up. One of these days I'll look at it, but I'm pretty sure almost every time a Frank Martin team gets out-rebounded by its opponent, especially as bad as they did against Loyola, pretty often, the next game out, they just crush the opponent on the boards. And if I had to wager, I'd say they're probably doing a lot of bubble drill work this week, which is where they put a bubble over the basket, throw the ball up, and make them just pound the glass over and over. That's all they do.
Yeah, I bet their thighs are getting pretty sore from boxing out as much as they've been doing this week.
And then you throw this Luke Colon factor in the mix, and it's like, man, how nasty are they going to be? So I think you could see a pretty focused effort, and we need to, because Curtis Kelly has just, as good as he's been scoring, he's been absolutely underwhelming in rebounding. It's almost atrocious how few rebounds he collects. And then you have Rodney Magruder, who consistently leads the team in rebounds. Rebounding is want to. It's being in the right place at the right time and doing the right things. It doesn't have anything to do with physical skill. You just have to care. And getting Curtis Kelly to care about that aspect of the game as much as he cares about his scoring is, you know, Frank's eternal challenge, it seems. So I mean, that's really what it's going to come down to. Florida's going to miss shots. They're going to take bad shots against their defense, and they're going to miss them. Are they going to get rebounds and get easy putbacks, or are we going to snatch it away and limit their possessions? And that, to me, is the key to the game. And that leads into the Wally Judge factor. if you'd asked me 24 hours ago, I said, no way in hell does Wally Judge play in this game. He's been not suspended, but he's indefinitely
not out. Suspended. Not suspended.
And a Kevin Keithman slip. Suspended himself. Now, he's out. Now there's word today that he and Frank are meeting to iron out the issues and figure this thing out, and that maybe he could suit up and play, in which case he would have missed zero games since the press release and one since he last played, if you count Loyola. I'm almost to a point where, you know, if he plays the way he played in the preseason games, great. If he plays like he did against Alcorn State, where he constantly got muscled out from under the basket and had just ridiculous turnovers because he played soft, that's not going to help us. So chalk him up as a total X factor. I don't even know what to expect there. But I think Freddie and Jordan and the others can lock this thing down and get it done with or without Wally.
Okay, now for maybe the second most potentially awkward moment in podcasting history. We're going to find out now if Panjandrum is back from walking his dog, really. And if he's not, we're going to have awkward silence here. So, Pan, are you back? He is not back.
Extremely awkward.
All right. Well, anyway, the next thing, you know, obviously, okay, the Florida game's coming up. That's the next game. That's the one the team's looking at. I'm looking at the game against UNLV because the game will be played literally within sight of my office window at work. I can actually see the Sprint Center from where I work. So I am planning on going down there. It was mentioned in the comments of one of the posts on the blog the other day that somebody was interested in doing a sort of a meetup or, you know, maybe a, you know, get together, bring on the cats, get together prior to the game, having a few beers, whatever, in the Power and Light. For our three or four readers who actually listen to these podcasts all the way through, throw a comment in and let me know if you're going to be in Kansas City for that game and if you are interested in meeting up somewhere in the Power and Light District to have a few beers before the game, because I will be going to the game. I would definitely be interested in meeting some of you before the game. So if anybody's interested in that, throw up a comment. I'll mention it in the morning links tomorrow, and let's see if we can get something put together for that. Other than that, UNLV, when you talk about the actual game, the Running Rebels were looking like K-State's strongest test coming into last week, and then they blew a halftime lead against Louisville at Louisville last week, which wouldn't seem like much of a shame, except then Louisville goes and loses to Drexel out of the blue. And then I'm blanking right now, bracket, but UNLV lost again last night to who?
UC Santa Barbara.
Yes, that powerhouse basketball program, UC Santa Barbara. I actually had forgot that. I was not doing that for dramatic effect, but thank you for
the Cowchos.
Yes, the Cowchos, one of my favorite team names of all time. Anyway, I don't know. We can talk a little bit about UNLV if you want right now. I don't know that there's a lot to talk about. We saw the Running Rebels last year out in Las Vegas. It's going to be interesting. They're coming into this game on a bit of a slide. You know, maybe you say their backs are against the wall and they really need a win, and so they'll dig in deep in a sort of a semi-neutral side. It's obviously going to be very pro K-State in Kansas City. On the other hand, maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe they lost some of their momentum from early in the season and they're having trouble finding themselves. I don't know what this recent losing streak for UNLV means, but I guess we'll find out next week in Kansas City.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of them. I really don't. I thought they could be top 15 good. But looking back on it, I'm realizing some of the early wins were not as impressive as I thought. You know, they won the 76 Classic, but they didn't play Oklahoma State, and they beat Virginia Tech in the title game, and Virginia Tech's just not good at all right now.
Unfortunately.
They have some road wins at various places, but none of those teams are particularly great teams. I don't believe they've even played a ranked team yet, so I may have been overvaluing them a little bit. You know, last year they got off to a hot start. They were undefeated when we beat them. I remember their fans were talking a little bit of trash beforehand, and it was a solid win, but we shot a ridiculously high percentage, so it's hard to know how things would have gone if we'd struggled a little more and had to do more of the little things right. When you're shooting that well, it masks a lot of your other sloppiness. They've got they've got pretty much everyone back, and they've added Quinshall Thomas, the transfer from KU that people may or may not remember. And he's been a pretty solid player. You know, most of what I've seen of them is in the 76 Classic, and that guy was just draining jump shots left and right, which is almost a lost art anymore among bigs. So, like K-State, they have a lot of impact transfers that have come in after not having as much success at other programs. You know, the guards, they got Derek Jasper, who came in from Kentucky. They got Trevon Willis, who came in from Memphis, and he's struggling so far this year. He has not played up to last year's standards, but, you know, he had his offseason run-in with the law, and there was some thought that he wouldn't even be on the team, so I guess it's been understandable. But by far the star of the group, two stars actually, are Oscar Belfield and Chase Stanback, who's the transfer from UCLA, and those guys have just been lighting it up. You look at any box score from this year, one or two, the other of those guys is their leading scorer. And, you know, that's going to be the challenge. They can throw a lot of talented guards at us. Can we throw a lot of guards back at them to defend them? I'm confident in Jake. I'm pretty confident in Irving. After that, it drops off a bit. You know, Spradling's man defense is not the best one-on-one. So that'll be interesting. But we should dominate them in the post. Their only really true power forward center is Bryce Masamba. And, you know, he's Vernon Macklin with less offensive game. So I don't see that that's going to be anything we can't handle. Thomas is very good. He's going to be a defensive problem for Jamar. But, you know, you can mitigate that a little bit. And then they got this new guy, Carlos Lopez. He's a freshman from Puerto Rico. And I was pretty impressed with him. He'd come in and give him some hustle minutes. So, you know, hard to say if he'll have too much of a factor. But I just look at that backcourt and think, man, we got to defend those guys and not let them get hot shooting, because that's what killed them against Santa Barbara. They hit 29%. They were like 6 of 30 from 3, just abysmal shooting. And they had been shooting really well up to that point. And I don't think they shot particularly well in the second half at Louisville. And as we all know from watching the Drexel-Louisville game, you don't have to shoot that well to beat Louisville if you play really good defense. So You kind of wonder what was up with UNLV. I respect the program, I respect Lon Kruger, but ultimately I think they're just a mid-major opponent, and they have some nice pieces, but I don't know how good their overall talent level is, and it comes back to K-State. Are we going to play well, or are we going to let them hang around? So,
well, we'll find out next week at the Sprint Center, and like I said, again, hit us up in the comments if you're interested in meeting up before the game. We can figure out a place over at P&L. There are definitely plenty of places over there that serve alcoholic beverages. So, with that, I'm going to move toward possibly the third most awkward moment in podcasting history, as I once again ask Panjandrum if he is back from walking his dog. Pan, you back? Fail. All right. Let's move on from talking about the stuff on the court to talking about a little bit of stuff off the court, off the gridiron, and all that. Earlier this week, the Big Ten Conference, the King Dingaling of conferences in the nation, according to themselves, announced that their new divisions, now that they have 12 teams and will be playing a conference championship game, which, if you'll recall, is one of the things that every single Nebraska fan will always point to as one of the things they hated about the Big 12, was the 11-1 votes that went against them, especially the one about the conference championship game, because God knows Tom Osborne just did not want to play that conference championship game. Anyway, the Big Ten named their new divisions this week, and instead of going with a geographic designation such as East and West, or North and South, or Northwest and Southeast, as was suggested on the Iowa blog Blackheart Gold Pants, they went with Legends and Leaders. Now, I don't have a clue why you would think that that would be a good thing to go with, to name yourself. You know, if somebody, you know, if like the SEC and the Big 12 and the Pac-10 and the Big East had gotten together and had a referendum on it and said, well, you know what, you're a historic conference and I think you should call yourselves the Legends and the Leaders, then I could see where there might be some, you know, some support for that kind of thing. But as a picture or a, a photo illustration that was posted on Blackheart Gold Pants in this thread this week says, hubris. If you have to tell everyone how great you are, they're probably laughing at you. And I would say that the consensus was that everyone was laughing at the Big Ten for naming their divisions legends and leaders. And now, that, to be fair, that would include a lot of people in the Big Ten and a lot of people who are new members of the Big Ten, i.e. Nebraska fans. So anyway, earlier this week, I thought we'd have a little fun on a slow Monday night with not much going on in K-State land. And we'd have an open thread where we discussed what should have been proposed as the names for the Big Ten. And we got some pretty humorous responses, I thought. I also invited the readers to propose names for the new Pac-10 divisions, and if they really felt like it, the SEC and the Big 12, even though the Big 12 will no longer have divisions now that we don't have 12 teams and will not be playing a divisional schedule. So anyway, we had a little fun. We poked fun at the Big Ten. We poked fun at ourselves a little bit. All the entries referring to Texas and Texas underlings as the division names for the Big 12 attest to that. And the post was picked up by, as I've mentioned several times, the SB Nation Iowa blog, Blackheart Goldpants, which is easily one of the funniest blogs on SB Nation. The writers at Blackheart Goldpants seemed to enjoy the post, seemed to think it was pretty funny, and most of their readers seemed to think it was pretty funny too and picked up on it and proposed names for the various conferences. Today, our friends over at MGoBlog, a Michigan blog, somebody over there, posted it and put up a post called KSU Blog's Attempt at B1G Division Names. I'm assuming that B1G is their play on the god-awful new Big Ten logo that looks like the word big, but also looks like a B and a 10. Just brilliant job by the marketing firm that the Big Ten hired. Essentially, the point of the post was that K-State has no football history to speak of, and therefore they have no room to talk shit on an established conference and such a great conference as the Big Ten. I will let that sink in for a moment because that should remind everybody of the great athletes who, upon having a terrible game and having the fact that they had a terrible game pointed out by every fan, analyst, and journalist in the world, get mad and say, well, you couldn't do what I do, so you have no right to criticize. That's right. We could not do what you do, but we have eyes, and we understand the game well enough to know what you do well, or know what works well, and know what does not work well. I have enough sense to know that calling yourselves, your divisions, the legends and the leaders, generally probably isn't going to play too well in the court of public opinion. So when we propose funny names that poke fun at the failings of the Big Ten, such as calling one division boring and one division unwatchable, monikers which would occur or which would apply equally to a lot of Big 12 North games over the last 6 or 7 years, to be sure. You know, we're just doing it to have a little fun. And judging by a lot of your reactions, you really didn't like the conference division names either. So I guess maybe it's just one of those cases where it's okay for you to make fun of yourselves, but it's not okay for outsiders to make fun of you. I'm not sure what the deal is, but I did learn over the course of the last 72 hours or so that people from Iowa have a much better developed sense of humor than people from Michigan, which is probably not surprising. So anyway, that's my rant for the night. I will probably reiterate that tomorrow in the morning links, just so that everybody has a nice, easy link to all of the posts that I'm referencing. Bracket, if you would like to pontificate on something, feel free to get up on your little soapbox and use a few remaining minutes to talk about whatever you want. Pan, I don't know if you're back yet or not.
What did I miss?
What's that?
What did I miss?
Oh, you are back.
What?
Thank God we didn't have the fourth most awkward moment in podcasting history as I asked to see if you were back again.
No, I actually, my son woke up, so we had to do that.
Uh-oh. Is that my fault? Was I talking too loud?
No, it was not.
Okay, because, you know, I really like you and I really like your wife and I've enjoyed hanging out with you guys on occasion. And I know that if I woke up your son from his sleep, that I would be forever in your wife's shit house. So I'm glad that it was not my fault that I woke up your son.
You would be persona non grata.
I know. That's what concerns me, is the fact that there are K-State basketball conference games coming up this year that I would really enjoy watching with somebody in Kansas City who also cheers for K-State. And you are the primary person with whom I watch those games. So
there is truth there.
I'm really trying not to burn the bridge here. So I'm actually going to take it down a level here, talk a little more quietly, and hope that I don't wake up the boy again. Anyway, with that, I'm really done. I said plenty in the last, I talked for about 10 minutes. Michigan, you suck. You're really boring. You're even colder than Kansas. You're practically in Canada, and you have probably one of the most depressed economies in the United States. So congratulations. You're in a conference that makes a ton of money. I don't really know exactly why. Well, I do. You have a lot of TV sets. But other than that, I really don't know exactly why. Congrats, Iowa. I have a newfound respect for your state. Generally, I had previously thought that you were just another bland Midwestern state with a lot of cornfields. Now I realize that you have a lot of people with a much better developed sense of humor than people from Michigan. So congratulations. That's it for me on the podcast. You guys are certainly welcome to jump in with any topics that you believe are of relevance to the day's events. Other than that, I'm done.
Well, I'd just like to remind everyone about the importance of spaying and neutering your pets. That is, it's a topic that's very near and dear to my heart. And much like Bob Barker, who's not out there every day doing that, I feel like it's my job. I mean, if Bill Snyder wants to spend every press conference talking about Kansas mentors and not firing his crappy assistant coaches, I feel like it's my duty to spend every time until that happens, until Chris Kosh is fired. I'm going to spend at least a couple of minutes every podcast explaining why we should spay and neuter our pets. And you know, there are so many of them out there. There was a nice feral cat that wanders around my neighborhood in the wintertime, and it's really, really sad. He looks cold, and he sleeps under pickup trucks, and in the summertime, he just kills mice and leaves them on our stoop, which is kind of gross.
He doesn't just look cold. He is cold.
No, he is cold.
It's really cold right now.
And he looks at me with those eyes, and it's really, really awkward.
But it's not as cold as Michigan.
No, it's not. Much like most of the jobs and intelligent people in the state of Michigan, they've all migrated away from there. I would assume most feral cats have as well if they haven't frozen to death. But no, I think it's very important, and we need to spend a lot more time talking about that. And you know, I too agree about the importance of mentors, and I'd like to spend another moment talking about mentorship and what it means. And sometimes, as a mentor, it is your responsibility to set an example for the people that you're leading. And I'd like to tell Coach Snyder that it's okay to fire people. It's not a bad thing. Other coaches do it all the time. Mack Brown did it.
Mack Brown did it.
And Mack Brown might be the nicest person alive.
By the way, if you guys have not yet heard Peter Bean's impersonation of Mack Brown, which he has done on the EDSBS Live podcast occasionally, it is spot on. It is a riot. Anyway, back to your Mack Brown commentary.
No, not really a Mack Brown commentary. It's just the fact that, you know, I have a book. It's actually, well, it was sitting here somewhere until maybe I filed it away. A book on leadership by Bill Snyder. I bought it when I was in school. And nowhere in that book did it say never fire someone. And you know, we talked about passing over the pinstripe bowl, and I'll just get in my soapbox for a moment. And I don't know if we're going to need a telethon. I don't know if we're going to need to get Elvis Costello and some other folks to start singing some sort of We Are the World song. I'm not quite sure what it's going to take to fire Chris Kosh.
I think that some sort of 80s hair band might be more appropriate.
Well, that would probably make sense. He was probably considered a decent football coach back when Winger and Rat and Warrant were still topping the charts. I just don't really really have much to say other than the fact that really disappointed. I know that a lot of moves aren't made until, you know, after signing day, which, like, he's really brought in anybody. But, you know, it's just one of those things. We get a little reverberation there.
Yeah, sorry.
No, that's okay.
YouTube's got a mind of its own right now.
That's the sound of the Go Power Cat Nation coming for me.
That's right. Yeah, yes, the Tards are coming for you.
Yeah, so anyways, no real rant. Just really disappointed that there really hasn't been much more scuttlebutt. That all seemed to die pretty quickly. I know that there were rumors of Jim Leavitt there for a while, and it doesn't really sound like that's probably going to come to fruition. It's more or less probably going to be the same coaching staff we had this year. I know that's a big shocker to everybody. I would be shocked to see anything. So, you know, until I'm sure folks are excited about the Pinstripe Bowl. I am in a weird sort of way. But I guess my football excitement is basically being put to bed after December, and probably won't show up until sometime in August when I'm really yearning for something other than Royals baseball to watch. So,
yeah, that should take a long time.
Anyway, yeah, well, watching the Royals for 4 months without anything else going on usually sucks the life out of me to the point where I'm totally okay with watching one of the worst defenses in college football.
Yeah, summers are a real bitch around here. All right, I don't want to leave you out, Brackett. Is there anything you want to pontificate on before we sign off tonight?
Well, in the spirit of the holiday season, as the bowl games are going to get started here in a few days, I just would like to express my gratitude and eternal thankfulness for basketball, a sport in which our team is actually playing toward something other than a meaningless exhibition game, and reflect on the fact that football has a postseason so screwed up it takes Mark Cuban reading Death to the BCS and deciding he has enough cash to throw around to amuse himself to possibly get any kind of traction forward on a football playoff.
True that.
I love our merry world.
God, I wish I was as rich as Mark Cuban.
And am I the only one that read that article and thought we are totally headed toward the XFL?
I did not think that. I actually, I posted a link to the fan shot we had on that. And I don't know. I mean, if money is the issue, then I don't see why we haven't gone to a playoff already, because I think the money, from what I understand, is probably better in a playoff.
Well, I just see a Mark Cuban-led playoff as well-intentioned as it is. It's just it's going to end either magnificently horribly, like the XFL. I totally see the national championship game being played in Vegas.
Yes.
With game day coming to you from the Palms Casino.
I don't see anything wrong with that whatsoever.
I don't, until you think about Lee Corso at Ghost Bar.
I think Lee Corso might be done, but I don't know.
Is he really?
I don't know. They gave him that nice tribute the other night on the awards show, so.
Yeah. Okay, then I can't wait to watch Desmond Howard. Oh, that's not even funny.
Go Michigan.
Yeah, go Michigan. Yeah, Desmond Howard's got the personality of a wet noodle, but that's not the point. So, anyways, yeah, Mark Cuban, good times, XFL, games in Vegas, I'm cool with it.
All right, boys. Well, I think that's probably enough for tonight. Thanks for everybody who managed to make it all the way through to the end of this. And again, I will mention that we are considering Pan. I believe you were gone when I brought this up, but leave a comment to this post if you are interested in meeting up before the K-State UNLV game down at the Power and Light District outside the Sprint Center in Kansas City. I will be there for sure. I cannot promise Pan's presence, but I will definitely be down there, and if anybody wants to meet up, I'd be happy to meet some of you. So with that, good night, take care, go Cats, beat Florida, beat UNLV, and Michigan sucks ass. Yeah.